afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart with Una Nowling on the board, Fiona Nowling, and Amber Urbach and Ann Pritchett. And we've got a really lively show to discussion to carry on today, and we'll invite the listeners to call in. Who's going to kick it off? Fiona?
Certainly. I've got a piece here from the Washington Post, and this is about how wonderfully the powers that be have decided to treat the CDC for their applications for next year's budget. There are forbidden words that they are not allowed to use in any of their requests for budget or for projects or for funding next year. And the seven forbidden words... This is.
Are you sure you can say that in the air?
It's not quite as cool as the George Carlin list.
I've got my finger over the delete button right now.
Okay.
Because these must be really, really horrible words if the Centers for Disease Control is not even allowed to use them.
I will say one word and pause so that you can get over your fit of the vapors and get your finger back on the button again, okay?
Okay.
The first word they're not allowed to use is vulnerable.
That sounds... vaguely pornographic.
Thank you so much for that. I'm not going into any of your porn files. Entitlement.
That's probably a swear word in Turkish. I better delete that just to be sure.
Diversity.
Oh, that's bad.
Transgender.
I don't know anything about those.
Those. So you're saying it's a noun? Fetus.
Don't fail me now.
Evidence-based and science-based. So if they're requesting funding for studies to treat diseases or anything, they can't say that they want their study to be science-based or evidence-based. You know, have some proof it might actually work.
I have a question. Can they use science?
Well, they're allowed...
Because it's part of, you know, if you ban science-based, that tells me that maybe you'll get in trouble if you use half of that, which is science.
Or based.
And how do you talk about
It's all acids.
Yeah. Well, how do you talk about diseases without talking about science?
For some of the phrases or words, they've been given alternative suggestions that are considered acceptable.
Okay.
Not for all of them, though. So they've been told that instead of saying science-based or evidence-based, the suggested phrase is... CDC bases its recommendations on science in consideration with community standards and wishes. So if you belong to a community that doesn't believe in washing their hands or anything, you wouldn't be allowed to cite studies and science that says washing your hands prevents the spread of diseases and reduces your chance of dying during surgery and stuff.
Get the fluoride out of my water, people, too. That would be another...
Yes.
We know that communities are always built up of educated scientists and well-learned folks. So I see no problem with this. I just, you know, if the community says we're not doing vaccinations, we're not doing vaccinations.
Is vaccinations one of the banned words, too?
No. Oh, okay. But if
they are
if they say that they're science-based or evidence-based, they can't. They'll have to say... evidence-based in consultation with communities and people's wishes.
Well, and as you know, ridiculous as this seems, CDC, a lot of this came down through the Department of Health and Human Services, which isn't just the CDC, but it's the National Institute of Health. They have SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, which give down millions of dollars in grants at the state level every year, multiple times a year. And for the longest time, they've promoted these evidence-based programs, which are ways of, you know, giving out medicine or mental health care or something like that using an evidence base, saying that studies have shown this works. We want to fund stuff that works. We don't want to fund stuff that doesn't work. And so I'm really interested in how programs are going to change throughout Kansas and Missouri with this coming down.
Well, also, let's remember, who is the head of Health and Human Services?
Well, the
Do
other
I have
thing
any
is,
answers here? That's Ben Carson.
No, Ben Carson is HUD.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Housing
right.
Housing and Urban
Development.
He decided he didn't know enough about Health and Human Services being a doctor wouldn't do
so
that.
So he's over
he was
HUD.
Given, yes, housing, which he would definitely know nothing
about. He was only
about.
Doctor-ish.
I prefer Doctor Who to Doctor-ish.
Well, that's true.
Well, the other thing is, obviously, some words they haven't been given alternatives for, so some things aren't allowed to be used at all in funding requests, budget requests, which means anything for, even if it was something for the health of a fetus, so it was actually like a friend, when she was pregnant, her child was found to have, I think it was spina bifida, and there are really advanced processes that can be done to operate on them in the womb and fix it so they won't be disabled and have issues for the rest of their lives. But if you were requesting a budget for something like that to do studies and to improve techniques like that to help the fetus, that would be banned because you couldn't mention the word fetus in
there.
Well,
you could say unborn child.
Well, it doesn't list an approved alternative, and there is no approved alternative for transgender. And so anything where there's no approved alternative, they're trying to cut those people off from funding.
I have an alternative for transgender. Most sacred creature ever to sanctify the earth with imprint of foot.
Yes, but it... You have, you have to remember who's going to be reading these. They might decide that it's their beloved President Trump who is the most sacred creature to ever imprint the earth with their tiny, dainty hoof.
I feel very vaguely ill.
I think you should.
You have to consider the community standards and wishes, as they have said. Well, and I think with fetus being included too, it's when we think of all the alternatives to fetus, they all, to me, kind of... give more personhood and humanity. Not that I feel like fetuses don't have humanity, but from a legal standpoint, changing that terminology can do great things to challenge women's reproductive rights, abortion rights, and things like that. So that's what, when I first read this, besides the whole anti-science thing, which has always been looming in the background for me as a social scientist, but that really scares me.
But there's always ways around it. You could call it evolved zygote, couldn't you? I mean...
Yeah, developing.
Easy, for short.
Easy, yeah.
Okay, so when they talk about hitting the easy button on whatever advert that is, I don't want to order what's going to come next.
Honey, I don't even know what you've been watching on our television.
It's the Staples easy button.
Oh, see, I avoided saying any advertising names.
That's okay.
We don't endorse any specific company here.
Or buttons.
Correct.
Or buttons.
Or
no.
buttons.
No, we don't want to get in trouble.
And for the question earlier, so I knew that Tom Price had stepped down from the Director of Health and Human Services, and President Trump announced in mid-November that he had nominated Alex Azar to be the next secretary. Yeah. That was announced via Twitter. I'm not sure if anything more official, presidential, governmental had been released.
Apparently he's testified before the Senate Health Committee on November 29th. I don't know if that counts as being... presidential or official. That's Azar, not Trump, because, well, I won't go any further with that.
Is he a doctor?
If he were, I would imagine that he would have said it, but it just says Alex Azar. Usually people that are doctors tend to say Dr. Alex Azar, but, I mean, he could have even gone as far as surgeon, because most surgeons drop it and go back to the mister, which is really interesting.
I am frantically scrolling, but I haven't found anything.
HHS has also removed information about LGBT Americans from its website. Apparently we're unpersons now. Okay, the unpersons comment was from me, not from the Washington Post.
There were also some surveys that they were doing for different research projects that asked about sexual orientation and, I believe, gender identity to capture individuals who are transgender, non-binary, and those were also asked to be removed and, I believe, have been removed.
Wow. They even removed information for LGBT people, including how they can receive help if they are the victims of sex trafficking, because apparently it's okay to be a victim of sex trafficking if you're LGBT. Just not if you're one of those other people, the non-icky people.
Well, you have to pretend to be non-icky in order to get help, right?
Oh, but that's so difficult. How do I pretend to be non-icky when I'm me?
I don't have an answer for that.
Very wise is my wife not to tear in on that one.
I just have to say I'm stunned. I'm stunned that there is so much ignorance abounding and that it's... I just can't comprehend how this can be happening. Just cannot comprehend it.
And I think these are seemingly small changes for a lot of people. I think that it's going to go under the guise of, well, you know, our budget, we need to strengthen our budget, we need to cut costs, we need to save taxpayers money, and that's what a lot of people are going to see from this. But, you know, I use half of these words in my day job work every day. I work on...
Stop now.
I know. And luckily, they're not under CDC, which doesn't mean that I would stop anyway, because, you know, I haven't received any direction on that, but...
Well, the Washington Post doesn't know, but it says it's likely that other parts of HHS are also under the same guidelines. It's not likely just to come down for the CDC.
Absolutely.
You know, I actually spent some time researching this morning. I was reading the comments on conservative news sites such as Fox News to see what is the right-wing spin on these seven banned words. And it seemed to fall into two primary categories. First, it's fake news. It's made up. This is all just lies. It's not true. This is just trying to rile up the liberal base. And the second set, almost in equal numbers, was this is getting all of you libtards back, because this is the exact same thing that happened under Obama. We weren't even allowed to. One person claimed, as a realtor, they were told that the federal government would not allow them to use the term master bedroom because it might be offensive to people of color, and claimed on a Fox News site that this was actually an Obama administration ruling. This is what these folks honestly believe.
I'd like this to...
don't believe that Obama was not born in the United States. That's still a pretty significant... there's still a pretty significant number of people who believe that.
And I yes. think as we heard, I believe on Thursday or Friday, the FCC voting to remove net neutrality. So net neutrality is the idea that internet service providers, so in this area, if you have, you know, there are various internet service providers, whoever you pay your bill to get internet, can control how fast websites load, what websites you have access to. There are already mobile phone companies that give you faster access to different movie streaming websites and things like that. I'm interested how that could control the information that we're able to receive as lay people online even more. Are we going to have to pay more to get different news sites? Are we going to have slower speeds to view different news sites, which is going to make us say, you know, I don't want to look at this news source, so I'm going to look at this other one because it's faster. And that's a way to kind of change the way that we're thinking about things and perceiving things. And, you know, it sounds really conspiracy theory. I hear myself saying it out loud and I'm like, wow, really? But it's something that I'm worried about. And when we see things like this with a CDC word ban, I mean, it really feels a lot more real, 1984 type world. Yeah,
I used to think that the internet gave us great ability to mobilize and to communicate, and it's like they're trying to shut that down so that we cannot interact and communicate with people the way we've been accustomed for the last, 15-20 years?
Right.
I'm not sure.
The internet and the communication the internet allows us, and the science that the CDC and those health and human services organizations give us, that is power. When we're able to say that, you know, the whole women health Supreme Court case in Texas with restricting what abortion providers could do based on these fake science terms, that they had to have all of these admitting privileges and that women were going to die if they didn't have larger hallways for stretchers. It was all based on unproven science.
Yeah, and they had to tell them that abortions led to breast cancer.
Right.
In addition to which, the other thing there are lots and lots of operations that are allowed to be done in outpatient settings and in clinics, such as breast augmentation,
right,
that don't have to be done in hospitals, that have higher death rates and risk rates. And those surgeons or practitioners don't need the admitting privileges at the hospital. And they've got higher risks than the abortions have. And so if they really cared about women's health, they would also lay that requirement down for breast augmentations, especially since they'll then get to look at larger breasts on women.
And you can see how limiting speech through repealing net neutrality and limiting the access that lay people have to science and that scientists have to science can really be used to control populations. And again, I know that I didn't see myself talking like this in 2017, but this is where we are. And
We had a guest on Trans Talk a couple of weeks ago on this station, and she had been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize because she participated and founded a project to get the information about HIV and treatments and ways to reduce risk and things like that. That information was provided by the government, and you could pay for access to it. And once you'd paid for access to it, you were allowed to freely reproduce it. But there were things like within the government themselves where the other departments, each of them had to pay for access for it. And so it was doing terrible things to their budget, and they didn't have the ability to spread the information around. When she made it freely available, they were able to draw it and use it for their research and for funding for and for their programs. And this information could be then shared worldwide. She made it available online in a great big database called Aegis. And it ran for years and greatly helped with the efforts to contain HIV and AIDS and save people's lives, especially at a time when this was still under the Reagan administration, when they were very strongly not sharing information, particularly in helping people that were LGBT, because those people are icky and they didn't want them to have anything to do with it or spend money on a disease that they categorized as a gay plague.
We're going to be right back after a short break to hear some announcements and continue our discussion on essentially what seems to be the war against intelligence.
On the next Radioactive Magazine, Pastor Donna Simon of St. Mark Hope and Peace Church tells the story of her journey as a lesbian woman serving as a pastor for an urban Lutheran church. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Did you know you can support any or all programs on KKFI, a 501c3 nonprofit organization, by becoming an underwriter? On-air underwriting acknowledgments are concise and can be positioned for a specific part of the day or program. To learn how to spread the word that you support community radio, go to kkfi.org/underwriting.
You're listening to Every Woman. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily or may not represent those of KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, board, staff, volunteers, or underwriters. Continuing on with our discussion, when we came down here today, when I arrived at the studio, I thought we were going to be talking about sexual harassment, sexual impropriety, sexual assault, and then you hit me with this news that came out last night, and we've deviated from what I thought was really a scintillating discussion that we were going to have. And I'm just sitting here appalled at what continues to come down. But let's now turn to everyone here probably has a different opinion, and I'm curious to hear about sexual assault, discrimination, harassment, and impropriety. Who wants to start with briefly describing what you believe those terms mean?
I'll go ahead and start because I don't want to, I can feel myself wanting to jump in when other people start. So I'll get my piece out and then I will sit back and maybe my mic will be muted. I don't
jump
know.
Jump in with both feet.
Yes. So when we were planning to talk about this, we kind of were talking about three words that we've been hearing, which are impropriety, harassment, and assault. And I've worked as a domestic violence and sexual assault advocate for many years, worked at institutes within universities that study and help with prevention of these crimes in many cases. And so I just want to give all of our listeners that kind of context where my opinions, and some of which are science-based. So come at me, CDC. And so for impropriety, I think this is an interesting word because often it's been used, it kind of has like a moralistic history. It's been used to describe polyamorous relationships, so having more than one sexual partner, having LGBTQ relationships, having sexual contact with individuals who are not heterosexual or not cisgender. It's been used to talk about affairs. And while all of these things kind of have a different moral weight to them for all sorts of different people, to me, impropriety is not necessarily something that's illegal, but I believe that all legal sexual activity falls under this umbrella of impropriety because it all is immoral, unethical. But just because something is a form of impropriety doesn't mean that it's necessarily illegal or that it hurts somebody. There are many people who would call, sex between two people of the same gender or two people who are not heterosexual to be a form of impropriety. And to me, that is not the case. So I just want to get that out of the way. And then we hear a lot about sexual harassment. Sexual harassment is a term that's primarily been used to talk about the workplace, but we also hear it with catcalling, so primarily men who are yelling at primarily women in the streets, whistling at them, saying things about their appearance, their body, trying to come onto women in public spaces or in private spaces, but also just making advances or remarks towards individuals who are not welcoming those remarks. And it's often in the context of being it's an environment that it's difficult for you to say, no, I don't like that. So we were talking earlier about how some of these instances had happened to us in the workplace, and we felt like we couldn't say, hey, cut it out, because we wanted to keep relationships with the people we worked with open and relatively pleasant on our end so that we could keep employment, or that we weren't physically harmed, which can happen to a lot of people. And then there's sexual assault, which based on every state has kind of a different definition of sexual assault. Some states don't have a sexual assault term. I know the state of Florida uses sexual battery, so it just depends. But that to me is sexual contact or threats of sexual contact that are inherently violent, not because they're punching you or anything like that, but because this threat of sexual violence is there. And above all of these kind of occur in many instances. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. So there's these patterns of behavior in society that help to perpetrate misogyny and male dominance. Not to say that men cannot be sexually assaulted or harassed by women, or that this doesn't happen between men or between women. I don't mean to say that at all, but I think part of what we're hearing right now is a lot of this is happening within that context of misogyny. And so that's kind of where I'm at and how I'm viewing all of these things. That's kind of the filter that I see this through.
Anne.
I hooked on to something that Amber just said that I want to point out. She said we couldn't say cut it out. Well, there's a good reason for that, because for many, many years, women couldn't speak up.
Right.
You know, one of the best examples that keeps going through my head in the last couple of weeks is the TV show Mad Men. And if you have not seen it, especially if you're a feminist, it's a must see, because it shows just merely 50 years ago what life in corporate America was like for women. It wasn't pretty. You know, I've been married 40 years, and the first credit card that my husband and I got was addressed to my card said Mrs. It wasn't my name. It was Mrs. and my husband's name. So really, it's been just about 40 years ago that they banned the practice of not giving women credit in their own names. So a lot of this, especially people my age, the baby boomers, we remember what it was like before we had the legal standards that we have today. And I don't think any of us want to do away with those standards. But on the one side, I want to say, bravo, we've come a long way. But then on the other side, I see younger people who don't have this history and don't understand that it wasn't always like this. So I think that's one context that we need to put this entire argument in. I think there's a different generation.
I'm
generational
lucky.
Aspects or views, maybe, is a better word.
I'm lucky in a way because I've been sexually discriminated against at work when I was still living in England, but I've never been sexually harassed at work. And it's terrible that you have to say that that's lucky.
Well, I have, and here's why it is lucky, because my mother was, too. My mother was a career woman in the 50s and 60s when most women, mm-hmm. I'm going to say at least most women in her social group, did not have a career. They were at home with kids. And so she came up against several times she said she was sexually harassed, and she couldn't go to the boss. If she went to the boss and said so-and-so is being, you know, inappropriate with me for whatever reason, she would have lost her job, because back then there was no legal protections for women. We had no Title IX. We didn't even have birth control pills when my mom first entered the workplace. And I really think that the introduction of the birth control pill is kind of what spurred a lot of the feminist movement on, at least that in my own lifetime, that's kind of how I associate it. So she didn't have that choice. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have the choice now, but we just have to remember that context. And it's still, that's why it's still hard for some women to confront it.
Absolutely. I think it is.
That was our context for so many years. We couldn't say, hey, stop, I'm going to tell on you, or I'm going to call the police. Or, hey, that's another thing. With domestic violence, I remember when it was okay for a man to beat up his wife. When I was a kid, we had neighbors, and he beat on her all the time. And the neighbors called the police. The police wouldn't even come because it wasn't illegal.
I have no idea whether it was illegal or not in England, but I do know that no one called the police despite knowing that the neighbor beat his wife.
There's this idea with domestic violence that a lot of people still have, is that that's not my business. What goes on between those two is their business. If she's really in danger, she'll call the police. And they don't see what happens when the police come and they say, well, he's got scratch marks on him, so it looks like maybe you did it, even though that's her fighting off her abuser. Or they say, we've been called to this house 30 times, so we're going to take our time getting there. And by the time they get there, something very serious has happened.
Well, that's what, there was one high profile case, I think it was in Massachusetts, where the man did kill his wife, and that kind of spurred a lot of the laws to be written.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, does anybody else, Fiona, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this? I'm kind of like putting it in the context of what's going on today in the political arena about women calling out, blowing a kiss as being sexually inappropriate. I personally find the blowing of a kiss to be pretty much innocuous.
It's stupid, and it's stupid and it's unprofessional. If the guy is a politician and he's campaigning for everyone to vote for him, I think blowing a kiss is really stupid, because that doesn't seem professional to me.
I think a lot of it, friend.
I mean, that's how we greet each other.
But that's you and your friend,
right?
Between friends.
I think it really depends on the context.
Yes.
When we're talking about this context of misogyny. But I think maybe we had somebody who is on the line who would like to contribute to our conversation.
Hey, everyone. It's Drew and Aletha. I was going to say, well, first off, about things changing, it was like, what was it? It was in the 50s or the 40s when a woman married her husband. If she wasn't consenting to sex, it wasn't considered rape because she was married to him.
The last state that actually adopted that law that did make it illegal for a man to rape his wife, that happened in 2003, I believe.
Whoa.
Yes.
So it's been much more recent than that. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that it was only 14 years ago that the last state got rid. Oh, wow.
It was 2003 or 1999. I don't want to misspeak, but I know it was much more recent.
Yeah, I know it's very recent. It's cited on those milestones, like when women could own credit cards in their name and things like that.
You know, it's also interesting to look at our country compared to other countries, and just certain liberations of women, you know, even compared to images in the media, and just seeing the difference. Like, the way, you know, it was over quite a long period here in the United States with certain things like pants and wearing different things, or just general outfits. Or, and I look at Korea, and I look, for example, at their music scene and how much their music scene has loosened up even since the 80s. And I'm sure you've heard of the guy who was basically the dictator of South Korea for quite a while. And they had a lot of heavy censorship things on songs and certain images for women as well, and how much it's loosened up. But I think with South Korea and how quickly it loosened up, I don't think there's as much perspective in certain things as we have here, because it was so quick that no one has any sense as much to reflect as we can. And I just wanted to add before I go real quick, with these men and their behavior, this you know, Matt Lauer and all these people, but especially with Hollywood, I think it's a reflection of some of these men. Because you're already in an industry where you really have to be driven, man or woman, to push ahead, and I think that same sort of attitude is reflected in like, I'm going to get this part, I'm going to get that woman.
Well, in politicians too, I think we can see those qualities.
I think a lot of it, you know, no matter what's on the books, what's, you know, Anne was talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm blanking out. But, oh, having protections for women in the workplace, even though those are on the book now, we hear time and time again, suddenly once something happens, oh, your performance isn't looking too good, oh, this, that, or the other. There still aren't protections for trans individuals in the workplace, you know, or if they are, they're very loosely followed. So I think it's important just to make that distinction, that just because it's on the books or it's a law or it looks like it's the way it is doesn't necessarily mean it is.
Well, let's not forget, what was it? I don't know, one of you may remember the date better than I do, but I remember when that, now this wasn't at a workplace, but I remember when that black trans woman was beaten on camera in front of people by, like, cops. I can't remember who it was. But no one was doing anything. And this was not, like 5 years ago? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. This was like the cops who you'd expect to protect someone.
Well, that's why no one would do anything. The cops would just shoot them for assaulting an officer. I mean, it's better to video something and keep yourself safe and have the evidence to present to charge them with the crime.
Yeah, thank goodness for video cameras.
Yes, although some states have tried to make it illegal to record cops in the execution of their duties because they're obviously so afraid of actually having evidence against the abuses.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll let you guys go and
thank
let you,
for
you
calling.
Get on with the conversation. Talk to you
later. Thank you. And I did look it up while we were talking. The last state to make it illegal to rape your wife, or your husband, I guess, was 1993 in the US. But even after they'd made it illegal, marital rape, as opposed to non-marital rape, was treated differently in its penalties for quite a while.
Goodness. That must be the date I was thinking of. Yes, 1993, but then marital rape was a separate crime.
Yes, with less punishment.
Right, because somehow that makes it
okay. Just because you said once... Yes, once doesn't mean that you should have to say yes every single time for the rest of your life.
Right.
I believe that it was only just criminalized in some countries, such as India this year, for instance.
Yes. And I've got a nice quote here that I read on Facebook. A gentleman called Melvinder Singh wrote this from Canada, and it's a conversation between two guys. And I'm going to paraphrase it for it to be suitable for radio. But this is a conversation between him and another guy at work. And the other guy says, "This sexual harassment stuff is ridiculous. But now I can't even tell a woman she's pretty without getting in trouble for it."
"Well, we've worked together for 2 years, and you've never told me I'm pretty."
"That's different because you're a dude like me."
"I gotta tell you, that's a little disappointing because I think you're pretty."
"Cut that out, bro. You're creeping me out."
"So, me telling you that you're pretty when you neither asked for it nor welcomed comments about your appearance is making you feel uncomfortable? That's interesting."
And that sums the whole thing up, because a lot of guys have never had that happen to them at work, where they would feel creeped out by someone saying something about their appearance or...
Well, in all fairness, this could just really be good old-fashioned homophobia at play.
That's true.
True, but the guy still made him uncomfortable with something to do with sex and made the workplace a hostile environment for him. And it demonstrated how it feels for women to be on the receiving end of that in just a few sentences.
Point taken.
I think
yes.
When we go back to the, you know, blowing a kiss or saying, "Hey, beautiful," or something like that in public, what is commonly called catcalling or something like that, for some people, they don't feel in danger when that happens. For other people, they do. And I think for me, as a survivor of sexual violence and as someone who is so entrenched in the work and understands that a woman in Waldo was shot at for not giving her phone number to a cat caller who asked for her number, to me, when I hear that, I do feel unsafe. And I've never called the police for that, but I have quickly exited the situation. I've had it happen in front of my husband. And we both felt unsafe challenging that individual because he was physically much bigger than us. We didn't know if he was armed. You know, we didn't know what was going on. And I think that that's important, is to look at the context, to look at the social context of all of this, and how when we live in a society that devalues women, devalues women of color, devalues transgender women and non-binary transgender individuals, it's important to see how these blowing a kiss, saying, hey, beautiful, affects people in context.
And my comment on that, excuse me, I got a lot of those kind of comments. I worked in a bar for many years, so this wasn't something that I hadn't heard before. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I was finally old enough that stopped. And instead of being sad, because it was kind of like a rite of passage, I was thrilled. I even told my girlfriend, you know, I just realized that I haven't had any man catcall me in over a year. Wow, that's great. And how sad is that?
Yes.
Because it should have been like a good thing, but right. Instead I was glad it was over.
You look forward to being old enough to be considered sexually undesirable and to become invisible.
Exactly. Because and the reason is because it happens so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been catcalled. I've also been raped. But thankfully, I've never had any nasty situations at work. It's always been outside of the office that I've had any issues.
I remember being the oldest person here. My first recollection of anything that would be, I don't know what you would call it. Let you guys tell me. I was asleep on a transmuter bus. You know, I was going back
like
and forth.
Like a Greyhound.
Greyhound, yeah. And I was asleep, and I felt a hand on my leg, and it started moving up. And what did I do? I woke up, and I moved my leg, and I just acted like nothing happened. And otherwise, the way I would handle it when I was out in the world, if somebody made some sort of a sexual innuendo toward me, I would just laugh it off. I would just laugh. Ha, ha, ha.
Yes.
Well, now then, maybe we need to train women that we don't need to laugh. But that seemed to be the way to handle it. But maybe we should say, don't say anything like that to me again. I don't appreciate
and
it.
It depends on how the person you're talking to or being talked at by takes it. Because you might think of a laugh as making it lighthearted and therefore inoffensive. But someone might actually take it the other way and think you're laughing at him and that the idea that any
right.
possible interaction of a vaguely sexual nature with him would be totally laughable and ridiculous, and then that could be even more offensive to him. So something that we're taught to use as a defensive diffusing mechanism could actually increase
right,
the danger.
I never thought of it.
And I think that a lot of times that laughter, and I don't speak for you, I just speak for myself, is involuntary. It's just what my body does to exit a situation mm-hmm. that makes me uncomfortable. And while I don't want to laugh and signal, this is fine, I'm okay with it, this is just a joke, ha ha ha, there are situations where I don't feel comfortable. You know, what I would love to do is say a bunch of words I can't say on the radio, tell them to leave me alone. Una reaches for the button. But I don't feel safe doing that. And I consider myself to be a very brave, outspoken woman. But when I get in those situations, my body does something that I can't control. And it's often laughter or, you know, even, oh, thank you, or something like that.
My experience with sexual harassment has been a very unusual one because, of course, those very few people out there that don't know by now, I am a transgender woman. And so I lived in the world of male privilege and male experience for many decades. And after my transition more than 5 years ago, I saw a systemic and systematic stripping away of all of these innate protections that I had had that I was not aware that I had had as I started to be catcalled. And at first it filled you with a mix of pride and shame, like having an Irish dad, I guess. You know, someone would catcall me and I would say, wow, they think I'm just like any other woman. And then I would think, wait a minute, they shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And it was very confusing. And as I went on and I suffered sexual harassment, as I suffered sexual assault, as I saw my accomplishments diminished, and I saw my prestige removed from me, and all of my importance gone. It really was an incredible, humbling experience that I am still in the learning process of even today. I really wish that there was some way, magically, that both genders could see what it's really like in the other gender's shoes, not just for an hour or a day, but for an extended period of time, day in and day out, because it's breathtaking, the differences.
And although the CDC, again, doesn't want us to use this word, diversity, but I think your story, Una, is why it's important that we have diverse voices, because we don't hear that. Most individuals live their life as the gender that they were assigned when they're a child, so they don't get to see that other side. And so to hear that is, I think it's really important for people to hear that and to see that.
I think men absolutely cannot grasp what Una just said about the privilege and the power that they have. They just don't see it. They do not understand it. They do not want to understand it. And I just think it's what am I trying to say here? Men do not want to understand. I've often said, where are men's voices in all this? Where are the men? Why aren't the men speaking out against domestic violence? Why aren't the men speaking out
and about... Some of them on the receiving end as well, so...
Yeah,
yeah, and you know, maybe I can twist this conversation a little bit, because part of the... I'm the mother of two boys, and who are grown men, and I married a good man who I can't even imagine him involved in any of this negative behavior. I think that we have a responsibility to the victims to provide due process when there's an accusation. The fact that someone can stand up and say, this person harassed me X number of years ago, and then that person loses their job or steps down or is publicly shamed, I have a problem with that, even if it's true. Because how do the victims feel if the person isn't prosecuted or taken care of? I was assaulted once. Now, what's different of mine is I was a waitress in a bar, and a guy grabbed me. I won't go into graphic details, but he did it in front of about 50 people. And before I could even react, the police were there. And, you know, in other words, I was never given the option to not report it. So I want to make that very clear. However, I understand what it's like. I very much understand what it's like for someone to invade my personal space without my permission, especially when it's my personal physical space. However, I was so glad that the justice system was there to take care of it, because 5 minutes after it happened, that guy was in handcuffs and he was gone.
But you had a very different experience with the justice system than most women do. So many of them, if you say you've been mugged and your wallet was stolen or something, they don't say, oh, well, were you dressed wearing flashy clothes that might have attracted someone to come and mug you?
Right.
Whereas if you're a woman and you get assaulted when you're out, they question what you were wearing, how you were dressed, how drunk you were, have you had previous sexual encounters with anyone, let alone with the person that actually raped you.
Well, the due process, in my mind, doesn't mean you interrogate the victim until they aren't willing to speak up anymore. Due process means that a complete investigation is held. And if you look at Congress, apparently they have been investigating some of these cases and paying money to people. We need to have public exposure to that. They need to release all of that information.
Well, a lot of those paying money to people things also come with basically a gag order contract. You take this $100,000 and you shut up and you go away, and this person's career and life and political clout gets to remain undamaged.
Well, and there's also cases I know where people have been accused, and the easiest thing to do is to pay and move on, even if they're not guilty.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can automatically assume.
And if we're talking about due process, we also should consider statute of limitations, which I don't really believe there should be a statute of limitations for rape, but if...
I'm not sure, though. I mean, what if you're a very young child? There is such a thing as repressed memory, and that comes out so many years later. And this has happened where it's too late to prosecute.
Yes.
And the perpetrator could still be offending other children.
Yes.
So no,
I think you
I'm,
both agree, yeah.
Yes, I said
I think maybe a very long statute of limitations on rape, 30 or 40 years. I hate to say, you know, because isn't murder the only crime without a statute of limitations?
Treason as well, I think.
Oh. Well, I think too, when we talk about all this, it's really difficult, because we wouldn't necessarily need a statute of limitations if victims of these crimes were given the help that they needed, were given the health care and the mental health care that they needed, and were treated like any other person who's reporting a crime to law enforcement, regardless of their gender, what the crime is, their sexual orientation, mm-hmm. gender identity, and race, which is another huge part of this.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times when we talk about due process, it comes kind of from the other side. I believe Nancy Pelosi said that, I'm struggling, I think it was about John Conyers, that... you know, they deserved due process and that nothing should happen until there's due process. But there's a difference between what's happening in a workplace and what's happening under the law. But I do love what you said about due process benefiting the victim as well, because it kind of gives them that
closure,
and it gives them, it really helps them back up their story, which we shouldn't have to do, but that's the world that we live in.
Well, let's, something that came to my mind when all this started coming out was Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, and I was told that Joe Biden has recently apologized to Anita Hill, if anybody knows anything more about this,
yes.
And that she responded that it was too little too late. Was what I was told. And I'm glad she responded like that, because that was absolutely great. Instead of, I might have said, oh, that's okay. No, she didn't. And I'm pleased. But meantime, we've got this man in the Supreme Court that obviously is suspect for Donald Trump-like. I understand that Donald Trump was charged more than once by the same person with rape. I'm thinking
he was also charged.
13-year-old
accused, and there was an issue. It was in the New York State, and the issue was that it was technically outside the statute of limitations. So they were at the time of the election, they were having a hearing to see if they could overturn the statute of limitations because of it being considered a continuing crime. Because as a 13-year-old. She allegedly, because we don't know the truth of the case yet, she had allegedly been told that if she ever told anyone about it at all, he would kill her and her family. And so that could be considered a continuing crime because of the threat against her life. And with the whole election thing, I think it all went away. But
I don't want to cut this conversation short. I feel like we could talk about this forever, but I really want, and if you all want to talk about it, how we kind of view this happening in the political system, how we view, you know, Al Franken was asked to resign and Roy Moore was allowed to continue campaigning by his party, encouraged by many, including the president, and how those acts differ. What Al Franken did is different than what Roy Moore did or was accused of doing. I apologize. Those accusations were different. I'm not saying, you know, how I feel about it one way or another, about them being different, but I think that there is a conversation happening that, well, Al Franken made a joke, it was taken out of context, whereas what Roy Moore did, you know, was much more serious. And how do we view that differently? What do we want from our elected officials? Are we okay with having elected officials who have settled out of court for these incidents?
What I do think is that it should be one punishment for everyone. It shouldn't be that the Democrats say we're the party of ethics and protecting women, so if any of our people do it, we step down, when that having that vote in the House or in the Senate could actually help protect women. It should be sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. Either everyone steps down for accusations of this, or everyone doesn't step down until the House and the Ethics Committee have ran through the investigations.
How does, you know, most of us work or have worked for a corporation or a company, and how would they handle this in the business world? I know how school districts handle it.
You report it to
HR. You are immediately placed on leave. You don't. They still pay you because it's just an accusation, and then they do an investigation if it's a criminal offense as well, or if it's a potential, I should say, criminal offense. The authorities are involved. In the school district case, when it's teachers and students, the Division of Family Services is involved.
Mm-hmm. And it's different in corporate world.
But
don't put you on
my point
paid
is
vacation.
That okay. My point is that they investigate, do they not?
They do investigate. You report it to
because
HR. They investigate.
Your
but the
HR is worried about
place.
Somebody suing
both
the company.
Stay in place.
Right. Okay. But my point is they don't step down right away. So there's something, why is it so different in the corporate world as it is in Congress? One accusation shouldn't be enough, because if that's the case, then we're going to lose half of the men and women in Congress. If it just takes one, then boy, I'm not going to. So what would prevent that from being the behavior unless we provide due process?
In a way, nothing prevents it, because during the recent cases with the Roy Moore item, a very well-respected news organization reported that a woman came to them and her story didn't really stack up, but she tried making accusations against Roy Moore.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually tracked her and followed her and found her going into a right-wing think tank, extremist right place. She had been paid to make those allegations, to make the other people making allegations look like they had been paid and put up to it.
And thank goodness that they found out, because that's my point. The only way that that didn't happen was because she was found out. Well, but we can't depend on that.
It was the Veritas Project.
Yes, that James O'Keefe who does that stuff.
I can remember the story, but not the names.
He himself now has such a shady reputation, I don't think he could walk into any place and try to get away with what he got away with a couple years ago in terms of videotaping people. But that was, you know...
Well, I think the difference with politics is that everything in politics is already the court of popular opinion, court of public opinion.
Yes.
So once a person gets smeared, depending on the timing of it, even if they're later proven to be innocent, that's already blown their chance for election most of the time. And then you get cases like Alabama, where it is only thanks to the grace and good sense of black persons of color voters who got out and fought with ridiculously long lines, 3 and 4 hour waits to be able to vote, and voted against him in rates of about 93% for black men and 97% for black women, that an accused, multiply accused pedophile was not elected. And if he gets shown to not have committed those crimes, theoretically that should wipe his slate clean and he can run again at the next election. And given the giant amount of support he was having from mostly white males, he'll probably get in.
We thought we might have more phone calls from outside. That number's 816-931-5534. We don't have very many minutes left, but somebody might want to call and counterclaim or make an opinion, verify or agree with us or disagree with us.
You know, in the last 5 minutes that we have here, do we want to speak at all about a prior guest on Every Woman, Andrea Ramsey, and what's in the news with her lately?
Absolutely.
Well, in case the listeners don't know, Andrea stepped down yesterday because there was a allegation made against her 15 years ago.
And, 2005.
Okay, I'm sorry, 12 years ago. And I think that's when it went to court or was settled.
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the end of the story is that the EEOC, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, investigated and they didn't find any wrongdoing. And the employee who accused her filed a lawsuit against the company that she worked for, but not against her individually. Anyway, so far all we know is that it was an accusation. And she says that it's a lie.
And an employee that was fired. I'm not sure if that was said.
Yeah, it was because she was in charge of the human resources, and she fired someone, and he made a report that she had tried to sexually harass him. And that I think that happens a lot more than we realize. I know as a teacher, I can report it happens in classrooms all the time. It happened to me where kids looked right at me and said, I'm going to go home and tell my mom you beat me up, when I hadn't even touched the child.
People, well, let's talk about harassment just a second. One time may just be a comment, but if it happens repeatedly,
right,
then
right.
It becomes harassment.
Yeah. Yes. It's like some people will say something, and if you act offended, they'll say, it was a joke. And it's like, okay, but I didn't find it funny. And then if they keep doing it again and keep saying it's a joke, it's like, it wasn't funny the first time, so the next 20 times, since you already knew it wasn't funny, this is a deliberate pattern of behavior.
Yeah. I'd be, you know, I might take back everything I'm saying right now if more accusations come forward. I know I did with Senator Franken. That was tough, because the first couple ones just seemed to lack so much credibility. But I do think that in light of all of this, that we need to move with much deliberation and make sure that we're being fair to all the parties involved, the victim, the alleged perpetrator, and everyone involved.
I think that the number one way that this problem is fixed, and by that I mean having sexual harassment and sexual assault allegations and fearing that they're being used as political ammunition, which I think is what a lot of us are afraid of, is to make it easier for women and men to report these incidents, to make there be a more streamlined way for universities through Title IX, for corporations, for nonprofits, for political offices, to make that process easier for those individuals to report and feel like they have due process and to feel like they are kind of getting justice that they are provided under the Constitution in our society. And I think until we do that, we're going to keep having these hard conversations. And it's hard because who I am, I want to believe these victims. I don't want to question what they're saying. I don't want to put them through the questioning that they're going to have from other people. But it becomes difficult when we know that political opponents are going to use this as ammunition. We know that is going to happen. It seems pretty unavoidable at this point. So I don't know. I think it's a really difficult place for us to be in.
I hearken back to what I think Justice Scalia said, that women aren't protected under the Constitution, that we do need an equal rights amendment to make sure that women have equal standing with men.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's, you know, what's sad is that a lot of, to go back to what I said before about looking at history, there's too many young people who don't understand the struggle for the Equal Rights Amendment and don't know about the work that was done for so many years to get it passed.
Well, going back to that banned word of diversity and to what Una was saying about different responses to different people, usually a woman kissing her husband or vice versa does not get catcalled at. But if a lesbian kisses her wife, yes, then you get catcalls and whoops because guys are thinking, yeah, that's the good type of three-way. They'll have sex with me. And they're putting themselves in the middle of that.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
And it happens.
I mean,
it does.
I'm not denying it.
Yeah.
What about gay men? Do they report? What kind of reactions do they report?
Most guys do not catcall gay men because for some strange reason they don't seem to find that attractive.
Fair enough.
Now, there's some women that will watch gay porn because for the same motivation as guys watching lesbian porn, but that's probably not a topic we want to open up right
that's
at the top
day.
Of the hour.
3:56. Yes. No thanks.
Yeah. How many minutes do we have left, Una?
We have about 30 seconds left to close us down and forward promote the shows that are coming up right after us.
And go for it.
Next week for Every Woman is Jim Ward, who's running for governor of Kansas. So that'll be on next week.
He's currently the minority leader of the House, so that'll be exciting, getting a chance to talk to him. And if anyone has any questions for him that they would like us to ask, you can email it to us or message us on our Facebook page, Every Woman on Facebook. And stay tuned for Donna Wolf. And after her, guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson? And I'd like to thank my wife, Una Nowling, who's at the board, Amber Urbach, Anne Pritchett, and of course, Sharon Lockhart. And you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Fiona Nowling.